This is the Hot Corner on the Sports Superstation with your host, Ryan McKenna.
Hello and welcome back to the Hot Corner, the source for all your baseball needs. I'm Ryan McKenna, and alongside me is our senior baseball analyst at Sports Superstation, Adam Connolly. Thanks for joining me once again, man.
No problem.
Today's episode is our final preview of Major League Baseball teams, as we will look at Canada's team, the Toronto Blue Jays, along with all the other teams in the AL East, while also taking a peek at the Philadelphia Phillies, who have made two trips in 2 years to the World Series, and the rest of their division, the NL East. Hold on, folks, this should be a good episode. We're going to start things off with the defending World Series champions, the New York Yankees. They are coming off their first World Series championship since the year 2000, when they defeated the Philadelphia Phillies last year. Hideki Matsui was named the World Series MVP, while Alex Rodriguez broke his postseason slump, having a great postseason. They made a big splash in the offseason, acquiring center fielder Curtis Granderson in a trade that we already told you about with the Detroit Tigers. The Yankees also dealt outfielder Melky Cabrera to the Atlanta Braves for Javier Vasquez, a starting pitcher, and Boone Logan, who will boost their bullpen with a left-handed arm. As we mentioned, World Series MVP Hideki Matsui left for Los Angeles, making a home with the Angels. Adam, will the Yankees have a good shot again at another World Series championship?
Oh yeah, there's no doubt they're going to be going into the season as the Major League Baseball favorite to win the World Series. You know, coming off they won it last year, and they've done nothing but like what you said with their moves to getting Vasquez and Granderson to improve upon that. So they'll definitely be the favorites. They have a great shot. You know, doesn't mean obviously that they will win it, but I'm sure there won't be too many people picking anybody else.
Well, exactly, yeah. Now, moving on to your team, the Boston Red Sox, they are returning this year after winning the AL Wild Card last season. This club made a big transaction at the trade deadline last year, acquiring Victor Martinez from the Indians. The club made some key offseason acquisitions, signing big names such as John Lackey, Mike Cameron, Marco Scudero, or Scoots, and Adrian Beltre. They did lose a big piece of their outfield puzzle with the departure of Jason Bay. I have two questions for you, Adam, regarding the Red Sox. First off, I've heard a lot of chatter around the Boston area, especially being down there visiting the area with so many Red Sox fans, and they're talking a lot about the defense, how it will be the big key for them having success this season, especially after acquiring Lackey and Beltre for third base. Will the 2010 Red Sox be a defensive team like so many predict, or will their offense flourish?
I think they will have to rely on defense and pitching. Their offense, I don't think it'll be quite as bad as what some people think it might be. But if they're going to be successful, it's definitely going to have to be their pitching and their defense, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, if you got Beckett and Lester Lackey as your 1-2-3 in your rotation, you're looking pretty good. And then if they can ever get, if Dice K can ever come back, healthy like he was in 07, and Buckles continues to get better, then their pitching staff should be very good. Their bullpen's pretty solid. And then, like you said, with the defense in the infield, you got Euclid and Bedoya and Beltre. Those are three top defenders. Scooter is not too bad himself. And then, you got Ellsbury and Cameron in the outfield. Yeah. You know, your defense is quite solid. So I definitely think their defense will be good. Whether it's good enough to make up for, an offense that may be lacking a little bit remains to be seen. But hopefully it'll get them at least in the playoffs. You know, I'd be surprised if they can catch the Yankees in the division in the regular season. But, defense and pitching especially is what wins in the playoffs, so if they can get in with the wild card again, even I think that they can make some noise.
It's going to make this opening weekend coming up this weekend that much more a big of an impact. If either team, if they win or if they lose, then it's going to make a key difference in the division.
Yeah,
am I right in saying that?
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, okay. I definitely can't wait to get things up and running Sunday night.
Next question has to do with a couple of veterans. Mike Lowell was suspected to be gone after the Bo Sox acquired Beltre from Seattle. He almost did get shipped off to the Rangers, but did not pass a physical. Jason Varitek, on the other hand, took a back seat after the trade deadline when they acquired Victor Martinez. What should fans expect from these two guys? Will they be more productive or less productive?
I think with Lowell is the type of thing where they're probably better off just to hold on to him.
Yeah.
Any trade that they make, they're going to have to pay most of, if not like pretty much all of his salary anyway.
Yeah.
So, they may as well hold on to him. I don't know how much he'll play at third base. If Beltre stays healthy, then obviously you're going to keep him out there for his defense and whatnot. But, Lowell still a decent bat off the bench, I think. Last year, even after his injury, he was still a pretty solid hitter. So if Ortiz, for instance, gets off to a slow start like he did last year, then you can pop Lowell into the DH spot, or even have him and Ortiz kind of switch back and forth. So I think Lowell could be a decent bat still. I don't think there is much trade value there, so I'd hold on to him. As for Veritek, I think that I think he's pretty much done. He'll be the backup. I'm sure he'll get some starts. He's still a favorite of Francona, so he'll get some at-bats and stuff, and where, Martinez might get a start at first base or DH or whatever, but I don't think the fans should expect a whole lot more from Veritek than the past year. I think he's pretty much all through.
Right on. Washed up, as we like to say. After that unbelievable season in 2008 where the Tampa Bay Rays recorded 97 wins, the Rays took somewhat of a step back in 09, posting an 84-78 record. They picked up Rafael Soriano to boost their bullpen, as well as Kelly Schopek to replace the absence of Greg Zahn. Big loss, folks. One of the biggest players that they lost in the offseason would be Akinori Uehara. As we mentioned, not a big loss. Adam, when you look up and down the Rays' projected lineup for the 2010 season, what is the biggest question mark for them if they want to compete or overcome the Red Sox and Yankees?
I think B.J. Upton's going to be the make-or-break point for them. If he can get back to his numbers he had in 08, especially in the playoffs, where the Red Sox especially just couldn't get the guy out. He's got as much talent as most guys in the league. He's got hits for power. He's got speed. He can do all of that. Last year, for whatever reason, injuries or whatever, he just slumped. So I think that if Upton can get back to, show the talent that he's got, gives him one more big bat in that lineup, and the Rays are going to be tough. There's no doubt about it. It's a three-headed race in the AL East, and any of those three teams could get in, and someone's not going to get in, which is unfortunate, and it could be any of the three of them. But as a Red Sox fan, I'm definitely wary of Tampa Bay. I think that they'll bounce back. I don't know if they'll get quite to the 97 wins they had in 08, but I definitely think they'll improve upon last year. So it's going to be interesting. They're going to duke it out right till the end, I would say.
Right on. We go from the three of the best teams in Major League Baseball to a couple of the worst teams in Major League Baseball. Let's first talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. They were part of one of the biggest deals this offseason. New general manager Alex Anthopoulos gave Roy Halladay the deal that he wanted to the team he wanted, the Philadelphia Phillies. In return, the Blue Jays received what was called the untouchable, quote-unquote, at the July 30th non-waiver trade deadline, and lefty Kyle Drabek, catcher Travis d'Arnaud, and third baseman Brett Wallace. It seems like a very tough question at this point, as Wallace will probably be the only player from that trade to crack the big league roster this spring. But was this a good deal from the Jays' perspective?
I think it was. I mean, I they weren't going to re-sign Halladay after this year. That was pretty much a given. So, basically have to take a look at who they got, compare that to the two draft picks they would have got by letting him walk. And they definitely got some good players there. Wallace is a guy that should be able to provide a lot of power. I'm not sure if he'll be able to stick at third base or not, but even at first base, I think he'll be, he should be a pretty good slugger in the league. And Drabek, like you mentioned, was a guy Philly really did not want to give up. He's one of the best pitching prospects in baseball, so as long as things continue to progress for him, then he should be all right. Like anything else when it comes to prospects, you never know for sure. You could get, the best two or three prospects in baseball, and, maybe they don't pan out. But I think for what, considering they pretty much had to move him, I think it was a pretty good deal, and they did have to do it. So, I think they should be pleased with what they got.
Right on. I just wanted to mention personally how much I respect Roy Halladay, a very classy guy. Not too many Major League Baseball players take up a full page in the Toronto Sun to thank Blue Jay fans. I have all the respect in the world for Roy Halladay. I'm not sure about you, Adam.
No, I would agree, yeah.
Yeah. Now let's stop talking about the past and move on to the future. The 2010 Blue Jays, Adam, they signed John Buck as a free agent to fill the catching void left by Rod Barajas. They signed Alex Gonzalez, who played for the Red Sox last season, and acquired Brandon Morrow from Seattle for Brandon Leake, who posted a one-hitter, I believe, in his last start last season, Brandon Morrow did. We forgot to mention that they lost Scudero to the Red Sox. Going into this season, what should Canadian fans expect from the Toronto Blue Jays?
Well, to be brutally honest, I would say not to expect too much. this is a young team. They're not going to... competing against the likes of the Red Sox and Yankees and Tampa now is going to be difficult enough in the best of times, and they just don't have the horses to compete. They're going to be down at the bottom, and that's the way it's going to be probably for a couple of years, and that's just what you know, Blue Jays fans are going to have to grasp and realize and kind of trust in the team that they're going to try to get the good young players and build themselves up.
Yeah.
As we mentioned, the young players they got from Philadelphia, hopefully they'll pan out, and in a couple of years they'll be all right. I really like the Morrow trade. I think he's, you know, he's got a live arm. He could be, you know, he could be a real steal in that deal there too. So they just have to be patient. They're going to take some lumps and just hope, you know, in 2 or 3 years time down the road they can kind of get back to where they've been in the last few years.
And I mean, they have a ton of pitching prospects, so I don't think that's going to be a big question mark for them. Travis Snyder, if he comes around this year, maybe he'll be able to develop.
Adam Lind took it. He really broke it last year in Aaron Hill. So they definitely have some good players still. Don't get me wrong. They're just not going to be able to compete at the level of the big three. But you know, if Jays fans have some patience, this, you know, they got a good nucleus there. That in, you know, like I say, in 2 or 3 years time, they could be back up to one of the better teams.
And hopefully, in 2 or 3 years time, Vernon Wells will not be our center fielder. The rebuilding Baltimore Orioles have high hopes coming into the 2010 Major League Baseball season, and for good reason. They posted a 64-98 win-loss record in 2009, but there were many positive signs for the near future. When you look at the Orioles roster, you see a stellar outfielder highlighted by Adam Jones, who hit .277 with 19 home runs and 77 RBIs last season. You see a great second baseman and leader in Brian Roberts. And then you see the prospects that will shape the Orioles lineup for many years to come. Matt Wieters made his highly touted Major League debut last year. He had his ups and downs, but did play well in 96 games, where he batted .288. Another prospect that is ripping up the fantasy baseball leagues around the world, Brian Matsuis. In 8 games last year as a rookie, he posted a 5-2 record with an ERA of .463 and 38 strikeouts. Adam, to just look at the Orioles for years to come, it makes a baseball fan excited. Where do you see this club in a couple years' time? Will they be a legitimate contender with the Yankees and Red Sox?
They definitely have the young players to do it. You know, like you say, with Adam Jones, it looks like a guy who's going to get better and better in the infield. They already have Markakis out there.
Yep.
And their young pitching staff, like you said, Matsuis just looks phenomenal. I think this is a guy that, you know, Strasburg's kind of been getting a lot of the headlines, and rightfully so. But you know, this is a guy that really, really could be something special, I think. And then they got another guy, Chris Tillman, who's got a lot of talent as well. He didn't make the rotation for this year, but he's definitely a guy to look out for. And Wieters looks like he could be a big slugger as well behind the plate. So I think that, you know, again, this year probably will be a tough year for Baltimore, but they're kind of in a similar situation to Toronto, except, you know, a little better off because their guys are a little more seasoned and developed. I think Baltimore is definitely going to be up there with the big boys in the AL East in 3 years' time. Could just be just brutal to try to get through. There's a lot of good talent there. So
if I
was an Orioles fan, you know, you're just disappointed the last couple of years and probably this year in terms of record, but definitely a lot to look forward to there.
Right on. We're going to move on now to the National League East. We talked a little bit about this earlier in the show, but the Philadelphia Phillies were very busy over the winter. In what seemed like a lot of complicated trades, we will try to break them down for you. Their first move involved Cliff Lee, their standout in last year's postseason. They dealt him to the Seattle Mariners. In exchange, the Phillies received 3 prospects, one of those being Canadian Philippe Aumont, who pitched for Canada at the World Baseball Classic last year. The Phillies were then involved in a 3-team trade with the Toronto Blue Jays and the Oakland Athletics, a deal that we mentioned earlier in the show. In that deal, the Phillies received $6 million and Roy Halladay, who they immediately signed to a 3-year extension worth $60 million. I don't think I will ever make that much money in my life. In that deal, the Phillies gave up Travis d'Arnaud, Kyle Jabeck, and Michael Taylor. Taylor was then given to the Athletics in exchange for Brett Wallace, who the Jays received. Are you confused there, folks? I know I am. Adam, with all these trades, will the Phillies be a big-time contender this season and for years to come, especially giving up so many prospects?
They did give up some prospects, but, you know, to pick up a guy like Roy Halladay, definitely worth it. It was kind of a, you know, it was a strange deal in the fact that they traded an ace for an ace and traded prospects to get prospects. So while they did give up some big prospects, they did get some solid guys back from Seattle as well. So I don't think they hurt the farm system as much as some people might think they did. At the time, a lot of Phillies fans were kind of, you know, wondering why they didn't just say to heck with the prospects and keep Halladay and Lee, which would have been just a brutal two-headed monster. But, you know, given Lee's injury status at the moment, it looks like they definitely, you know, made the right move. I've said all along, despite Lee's season the last couple of years, I would still take Halladay over him. So I think that Philly's definitely the the favorite to win the NL East and the National League in general again this year. And they don't have a whole lot of older guys either, you know, Utley and Rollins and Howard and, and now Halliday. These guys are still pretty much in the primes of their career. So to answer your question, they're definitely still going to be a contender this year and for the next few years for sure.
And don't forget about Dominic Brown, their top prospect. He should be – he could arrive this year or –
I believe he's still only 19 or 20. So, but that's the that's the good thing about being a team like the Phillies with their top prospects is they don't have to rush these guys, right? You got guys like Worth and stuff in the outfield, so you can wait maybe an extra year or two where some teams might rush them through. But yeah, they like you said, guys like Brown, they still do have some pretty good young players there. So, the Phillies will be they'll be the team to beat there for a while. Yeah,
right on. The 2010 baseball season for the Atlanta Braves is somewhat overshadowed by their manager. Surprising. This doesn't happen too often, but with the manager as spectacular, 2010 will be Cox's last season as manager of the Atlanta Braves, and for any team for that matter, Cox will retire as manager at season's end. Enough talking about Cox on the field now. The Braves were busy this past offseason. General manager Frank Ruane made a few moves to bolster his bullpen and an interesting trade that involved one of their better starters. Javier Vasquez, who won 15 games in 2009, was traded to the New York Yankees for Melky Cabrera. Melky will give the Braves a young, good-hitting outfielder. As for the bullpen, they picked up Billy Wagner from the Red Sox via free agency, while also getting Takashi Saito, who pitched for the Red Sox and is 40 years old. Adam, how do you predict the Braves will finish in Bobby Cox's last year? Will he go out with a bang?
He could. The Braves have a pretty solid team. I don't know if they could challenge the Phillies for the division, but they should be right there at the wild card race. They do have a lot of pitching. They got some question marks in terms of injuries, you know, with some of their better guys, the Chipper Jones and,
Chipper.
And Wagner coming back off injury and whatnot, and Tim Hudson as well. So if those guys can all stay healthy, they'll definitely, you know, should, you know, have a good year. Of course, the other end of the spectrum, if most of them battle injuries throughout, then they might struggle. But, you know, I'm still confused with the Vasquez trade. I know they had some extra pitchers to deal with, but I definitely think they could have got more for him. But anyhow, I think the Braves team, you know, is set up to have a little bit of a run, and whether, you know, the fact this is Cox's last year, you know, throws a little bit of sprinkle of nostalgia or something in there for them. You never know, something like that could. But I think you'll see the Braves in the playoff race towards the end. And maybe, you know, if everything falls right, maybe they will challenge the Phillies, you know, for the division.
Really the big question about injuries, and we're going to move on to another team who had a small amount of injuries, to say the least. The New York Mets last season had, they said a lot of either one of these two things, complaining or belly aching, or both. The Mets had every right to complain about their injuries, as we just mentioned. That surrounded their team for pretty much all last season. I believe at one point, Adam, was it 13 regulars out of the lineup? I know it was quite a few.
Yeah.
The bellyache involved their new ballpark, Citi Field, where it is so spacious that the Mets' leading home run guy, Daniel Murphy, hit only 12 home runs all season. That's 12 home runs, folks. That is nuts. What did the Mets do? They went into the free agent market and signed 36 home run, 119 RBI guy, Canadian, also Jason Bay, who played for the Red Sox last season. They signed him to a four-year, $66 million contract. Adam, if you had to choose between the Mets' biggest questions this season being either starting pitching or injuries, which one would you choose?
Well, they're definitely both question marks. I mean, their pitching, aside from Johan Santana, assuming he's healthy, is very shaky.
Yeah.
But I probably would have to go with injuries again. They were just decimated last year. I've never seen anything like it as far as not just injuries, but to star players. And it's not off to a good start again this year with Beltran being
there. Reyes.
They thought that... Beltran and Reyes as well, yeah. Reyes, they're hoping, I don't know if he'll be back for the start of the season, but they think he should be back, you know, sometime mid-April, so he shouldn't miss a whole lot of time there, so hopefully he can get back and stay healthy. Beltran, on the other hand, originally they thought he'd be back mid to late April, now it looks like it's going to be probably mid-May, so that's a little bit disappointing. And then Wright last year was hurt a little bit. He's healthy at the moment. So, their offense is quite solid if they get everyone in there. Now, if they have Bay along with Reyes and Wright and Beltran and whatnot. Injuries for sure. And even Santana, you know, this is a guy, he has to stay healthy there. Pitching staff cannot afford for him to go down. So, the Mets are going to be in for a tough. I just don't think that they have what it takes to compete with Philly or even Atlanta. But if they can stay healthy, you never know.
You never know. Same with all teams in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. If you can stay healthy... you might be all right. The Florida Marlins were oh so close to capturing the NL wildcard last season. The Marlins made a late charge but fell five games short of capturing the wildcard. Saying that, the Marlins did have a lot of ups in the 2009 campaign. They had a record of 87-75, while Hanley Ramirez played unreal, batting .342 with 24 home runs and 106 RBIs, while also stealing 27 bases. Also impressive was NL Rookie of the Year Chris Kogan, who batted .321 in left field. Adam, going into this season, a lot of people were talking about Dan Uggla and how he could be going out of town with that big contract of his, paving the way for young second baseman Emilio Bonifacio. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Bonifacio. To take his place. What are the latest on these rumors? Will Uggla be in a Marlins uniform at the end of the year?
I haven't heard anything recent in terms of rumors for Uggla. I know there was some talk throughout the offseason that he would be dealt, and a lot of people thought he'd be dealt before the season started, but that obviously isn't going to be the case. I think he'll be there for a while. It's kind of a tricky situation. The Marlins, of course, with their financial situation, never really have much money to spend. So if they could get a decent deal for him, I would see him being dealt. Marlins, again, you know, in terms of win-loss record, like you said last year, we're kind of right there. So, you know, if it's close to the deadline and they're right in it, they may not want to move him. I think if it's, you know, the deadline's approaching and they're back a little bit, I think for sure he will be dealt. But, again, it's hard to say, you know, whether, you know, if they're right in the middle of the heat of the playoff race, if they're going to want to deal one of the guys who's probably going to be one of their better hitters. So it'll be interesting to see. It's kind of a strange situation with a team like that that, you know, probably shouldn't deal him, but, you know, financial restraints might cause them to have to deal him. So I'd say 50-50 right now.
As for their manager, I was reading a lot of talk during the offseason about them almost firing their manager, Gonzalez. Do you see him doing or staying around at season's end or even during the season if they're struggling?
The Marlins are just such an odd group. I mean, especially because of managers, you know, as we recall a couple of years ago, Girardi was out there, won NL Coach of the Year, and then got fired. So, I mean, who knows really with them? You know, this is a guy that's got a team that doesn't have the talent, you know, in terms of the Phillies and whatnot. They don't have the payroll to be able to get guys, but yet they still, for the most part, put out pretty good seasons. So, you know, who would have thought the Marlins would win 87 games last year? I think if they approach that win total again, it's kind of hard to fire the guy. But again, you know, Florida, who knows?
Moving on to another who knows team, the Washington Nationals. God love them. For the second year in a row, they won only 59 games, and I'm not totally sure the numbers, but it seems the last number of years, at least, they've had the number one overall selection in the MLB entry draft. Speaking of that MLB entry draft, in 2009, the Nationals selected highly touted Steven Strasburg, the 6'4", 220-pound, righty out of SDSU, or San Diego State University. He has a fastball that clocks 102 miles per hour. They barely signed him, however, with only a minute and 13 seconds left before the deadline that they did sign him, and he did receive $15.1 million. This club has been brutal, to say the least. I hate to be so harsh, but their defense has been putrid as well. I think they led the league in most errors, that's for sure. But sticking to Strasburg, when will we see him in a Nationals uniform this season? I mean, he was doing quite well. Personally, I think he was doing quite well before he was sent to minor league camp. And I guess when we do see him, will he be what people expect?
He definitely looked pretty good in the spring. As far as when he'll be up, it's kind of a tricky situation. Of course, you know, the sooner you get up, the start when your arbitration clock starts ticking, and then, you know, the less time that you haven't sewn up for. So it might be in Washington's best interest to hold off a little bit, you know, maybe till, you know, June, July kind of thing for sure. But, you know, if he starts out on fire in the minor leagues and, you know, the guys, you know, putting up big numbers, and Washington, chances are going to struggle out of the gate. So, you know, if they need to bring him up to put some butts in the seats and to make some money, you know, that might be the way that they do it. So I think a lot of it will depend on Strasburg. If he starts to struggle, they're definitely not going to be in a rush to bring him up. But everything we've seen from him, and, you know, he seems like he's going to be the real deal. Again, like I mentioned previously, the prospects, sometimes you just never know. Those guys that, the guys that are surefire, you know, can't miss prospects, do miss sometimes. But this guy looks to be, you know, along with Jason Hayward there from Atlanta, seem to be guys that are, you know, as sure things as you can get. So I think you'll see him up definitely at some point this year, you know, assuming that he stays healthy.
Right on. That will just about wrap things up for this episode, guys. I want to sincerely thank our senior baseball analyst, Adam Connolly. I don't know what I could have done without you, man. I really appreciate all this.
No problem at all.
Be sure to tune in on Saturday evening, April 3rd, the day before opening day in Boston, as we will chat back at the studio about the hottest topics this spring. Ron Washington, smoking dope, is one of them. We're going to lead things out with our pitch here at Sports Superstation on how we're going to try to help 80. Over 50 young artists from Canada, ranging from Nikki Yanowski, my future wife, to the lead singer of Headley, to Drake, a rapper, they got together to perform Kanaan's song called Waving Flag. When you purchase this song at www.youngartistforhaiti.net, all proceeds go to 80. I hope you enjoy this song, folks, and are able to help out for the folks in Haiti. Have a good week, everyone, and we will see you Saturday.
The Hot Corner is a presentation of Sports Superstation. This show was written, directed, and produced by Ryan McKenna. Editing and technical director is Matthew McKenna. Marketing department and assistant technical director is Mitchell McKenna. Engineer, Patrick McKenna. Senior baseball analyst, Adam Connolly. See you next week.
Out of the darkness, in came the carnage, threatening my very survival.
Fractured my streets and broke all my dreams. Now feels like defeat, a wretched retreat.
So we struggling,
fighting to eat.
And we wondering
if we'll be free.
We cannot wait for some fateful day. It's too far away. So right now I say,
when I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag. And then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes back. Whoa.
So many wars settled in stores.
All that we've been through, and now there is more.
I hear them say, love is the way,
love is the answer, that's what they say.
But we're not just dreamers, or broken down grievers.
Our hand will reach us and heaven will see us.
This can't control us, no it can't hold us down.
We gon' pick it up even though we still
struggling
under la survie.
And we wondering,
battant pour nos vies,
patiently wait for some other day.
Far away, so right now I say,
when I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag. And then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes back. Whoa. When I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag. And then it goes back, and then it goes back, and then it goes back.
When the media stops covering and there's a little help from the government, we forget about the people still struggling and assume that it's really all love again. Nah, see, we don't have to wait for things to break apart. If you weren't involved before, it's never too late to start. You probably think that it's too far to even have to care. Well, take a look at where you live. What if it happened there? You have to know the urge to make a change lies within, and we can be the reason that they see their flag rise again.
When I get older, I will be stronger. They'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag.
And then it goes back,
and then it goes back.